Today on This Week in Space, we talk to Dr. Rick Janae of Expanding Frontiers about careers in new space. Stay with us. This episode of This Week in Space is brought to you by Cisco Meraki. Without a cloud-based network, businesses inevitably fall behind. Experience the ease and efficiency of Meraki's single platform to elevate the place where your employees and customers come together. Cisco Meraki maximizes uptime and minimizes loss to digitally transform your organization. Meraki's intuitive interface, increased connectivity, and multi-site management keep your organization operating seamlessly and securely wherever your team is. Let Cisco Meraki's 24/7 available support help your organization's remote, on-site, and hybrid teams always do their best work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is This Week in Space, episode number 72, recorded on July 28th, 2023. New Space Careers with Dr. Rick Janae. This episode of This Week in Space is brought to you by ACI Learning. IT skills are outdated in about 18 months. So launch or advance your career today with quality, affordable, entertaining training. Individuals can use code TWIT30 for 30% off a standard or premium individual IT pro membership at go.acilearning.com/twit. And by Cisco Meraki. With employees working in different locations, providing a unified work experience seems as easy as, well, herding cats. How do you rein in so many moving parts? The Meraki Cloud Managed Network. Learn how your organization can make hybrid work work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Space, the New Space Careers Edition with Dr. Rick Janae. I'm Rod Pyle, Editor-in-Chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and I'm joined by Sir Jeffrey Notkin, the original one and only, well, one of two, meteorite man. How are you, Jeffrey?
I'm well, thank you. Greetings, Captain Rod Pyle. 'Tis marvelous to see and hear you through the wonders of modern technology.
Wow. That's very smooth. Joining us today, as I said, is Dr. Rick Janae, a dear friend, founder and executive of the nonprofit Expanding Frontiers, which I admire greatly. And thanks for joining us today, Rick. How are you?
I am great. And thank you so much, Rod. It's fantastic to be here and really excited that I'm able to share today's podcast with Jeff. Jeff, hello. It's good to see you.
Well,
again. Hello,
Rick. It's, or should I say, Monsieur Genet. It is excellent to be online with you, sir.
All right. Before we begin, we have a space joke, and I think I might have used this before because I had it queued up, Rick, when we had you previously scheduled. So I apologize to the audience if I've misused it, but it was so good.
It's a recycled space joke?
Use it again. Well, kind of. So Jeffrey always comes up with the best ones because he writes his own. But I just enjoyed this one. This came in from a listener named Benji Kirk, and it goes thusly. Hey, Jeffrey. That's where you say yes, Rod, Jeff.
Oh, this is interaction with the audience.
Yeah, this is interactive comedy.
Well, I'm so sorry. I thought that was part of the dialogue.
That's okay. Hey, Jeffrey.
Yes, Rod, what is it?
What's E.T. short for?
What's E.T. short for? Existential trauma.
No, because he has little legs.
That's not a meteorite joke. Well, I guess it would be if he landed hard. Nice one.
Oh, okay. Now yours, please.
Okay. I have two. A short one and a long one. Do you want the short one first or the long one?
Your pick of the winner.
Okay, I'm going to do the long one first because you might be a little annoyed at me after this, and then I can hopefully get back in your good graces with the short one.
Okay,
so this is a planetary defense joke in honor of last week's stupendous episode. And also, I mentioned to Monsieur Genet that I have a joke, un plaisant, au sujet de Le Petit Prince, a joke about the Little Prince. So the Little Prince was quite a famous inhabitant of asteroid B612. And one day he grew up to be the Big Prince. And he was quite successful because he had a book that did really well. And he liked to have tea on the porch of asteroid B12, but was annoyed by this rather trashy nearby asteroid called B702. Can't something be done about the state of that asteroid? He asked one of his assistants. Of course, Your Majesty. I'll have it tidied up and painted tout suite. The next morning, while enjoying his tea, the Big Prince noticed that asteroid B704 wasn't there at all. "Where is that grotty asteroid?" he asked. "Well, monsieur, we tidied it up and painted it as you commanded." And the big prince said, "Did you paint all of it?" And the assistant said, "Well, no, monsieur, only the side that you can see." "Stupid!" exclaimed the big prince. "See what happens when you paint just one side of an asteroid?" And so B-704 traveled away into deep space as an example of asteroid defense. But all was not lost, because Gerry Anderson used the wandering asteroid for his remake of Space 1999.
I don't understand.
You know, it is an asteroid defense joke.
It's a good story, but better than that was your attempt at a French accent. I really enjoyed that.
Okay, my second very short joke. Why did the space antelope and the space deer agree to meet halfway between the Earth and the Sun?
Because that would put them at home on the Lagrange.
Oh, well done. Because they were home on Lagrange.
Oh, yay.
Well done. Well done, Rod. Well played, sir.
A little slow on the button there, Matt. Okay.
I don't understand one.
As always, we invite you to join Team Tarek and send us your best or worst space joke. I guess this week it would be Team Jeffrey, but you know the drill. Don't be shy, because they can't be any worse than the ones I bring. And don't forget to do us a solid. Make sure to like, subscribe, and all that good podcast stuff for us, because we love you and we know you love us. So now on to headlines. We're just going to do two this week because we don't have Tarek here. First one, and we're going to be talking about this in a couple of weeks coming up. The New Horizons mission is in jeopardy. This is from Ad Astra magazine, my very own publication. NASA is debating a number of programmatic budget cuts, presumably to help support the ever-blossoming costs associated with the Mars sample return mission. But, of course, SLS, Orion, Artemis, and ISS still gobble up substantial amounts. Mars sample returns passing the $10 billion mark, which is not what we wanted to hear. And as part of that belt tightening for the upcoming budget, it suggests that the New Horizons mission could be one of the big losers. New Horizons, as you probably remember, flew by Pluto years ago with a number of large revelations, including the cryodynamics on the surface, and later passed the Kuiper Belt object called Arrokoth. So in speaking to the mission's principal investigator, Alan Stern, he mentioned that he had plans to rendezvous with one or perhaps two more outer solar system objects, but the new plan from NASA is reportedly to find a new team to run the mission, which would essentially put it into zombie mode until future plans are made. And this what's fascinating about this is we're about $1 billion into this program. At this point, yearly upkeep costs about $9 million, which is kind of a rounding error in NASA terms, certainly in aerospace and defense terms. But this is one of the places they're looking to cut maybe $3 million off that number by putting in a less experienced and less seasoned team and not continuing their research into the Kuiper Belt region. So none of us are very happy about that. And as I mentioned, we'll be talking about this later, but don't be shy about reaching out to your congressional representatives if you wish, because along with some of the other cuts, we don't think it's a very good idea. And if I may editorialize for a moment, when we're well past the trillion mark on the F-35 program, gag me with a spoon, this isn't the place to be cutting funds, in my opinion. Any comments, Jeffrey?
Yes, I definitely agree with you, Rod. And in part, it's been an immensely successful mission. Alan Stern is a brilliant PI. And Alan Stern is also one of the most brilliant science speakers out there. And he does so much for the field. I've seen him. I've had the pleasure of seeing him speak in person many times. I've actually gone out of my way to see the same talk again, because he engages so wonderfully with the audience, and he really brings the science and the excitement to life. So cutting funds from an Alan Stern project is like cutting funds from all of science. He is a wonderful investment. And I would, this reminds me of a documentary I saw a few weeks ago called It's Quieter in the Twilight, about the small group of people who are still running Voyager 1 and 2 after all these years. And it proves that a good mission can have longevity way beyond its expected time. And I would hope that that is the case, not just for this project, but for anything that Alan Stern is involved in. I'm a real big fan of his. So yes, we should speak up loudly with support. Agreed. $9 million a year is a very small amount of money to keep an important spaceflight project.
$9 million. Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned Voyager, because that's about the same amount it takes to keep running Voyager after all these decades. And I've seen the Voyager headquarters a couple of times. At this point, they've moved it back onto JPL property. It was not there for a while. But it's a handful of people, two old workstations from the 1970s that they're still running the mission off of because it's cheaper than rewriting all the software. And really just a very, very bare bones, threadbare kind of operation. But it works, and it works pretty well. And that's really all that the people involved with New Horizons are asking for. Rick, any thoughts?
I mean, this is the kind of thing we see all the time. I've seen stuff like this happen with the ground-based observatories. And it's kind of funny because it's the same level of money you're talking about. And, you know, there's so much that goes into these missions or these observatories and so forth. And there's always a lot of behind-the-scenes politics that one never really knows what the reasons really are for why things are happening. Especially when you wonder, it's like, well, it isn't really that much money. But yet that's coming out of someone's budget.
Yeah.
And so they got to make ends meet and stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of pieces at play on these things. It really is amazing to me. I'm always amazed that people fund that the public funds these things. And of course, the reason they do that is because people like us that go around and try to communicate this to everyone and try to get it out there, how important this is to everybody. So it's sad to see these types of things happen, but it is very prevalent, especially in the last decade or so. But anyway, yeah, that's my sense.
And any self-respecting PI has to go to bat for their mission, and I certainly get that. And you're right. I mean, it's got to come from somewhere. And I mean, I haven't worked directly at NASA field centers that much, but you know, you don't see a lot of waste around those places. You know, yeah, they keep the grass mowed if it's alive, although often it's not because of water reclamation or environmental programs that they have. And I mean basically they trim all the corners. So when you get something like this, you start scratching your head and thinking, well, gosh, let's look at the big aerospace contractor arrangements for a minute. But that's a whole nother discussion and very political, so I'll stay out of it, because I have another story which I like to call Boeing space. This is from Space News. Oh dear Boeing, the first crewed flight of their oft-delayed Starliner capsule is still in limbo after being funded on much higher levels than SpaceX's similar efforts years ago to develop a system to deliver crews to the International Space Station in the wake of the discontinuation of the space shuttle program. And Boeing continues to struggle, and we've seen what SpaceX is doing. Yeah, that is far from struggling. Boeing reported a $257 million loss in the last quarter that was announced related to Starliner. This after covering the cost for a repeat of an uncrewed test flight, and yet still a number of more problems are being uncovered. We already had the stuck valves prior to launch, and now we have faulty parachute lines and flammable tape wrapped around the wiring loom, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So the news here is not that so much as the fact that the date is still sliding. It was originally estimated to be happening on July 21st, but at this point it's off in the mists and undefined. And it's editorial comment here, but it's stunning to me that the company that built such masterpieces as the B-17 and the 747 and all its variants and the SLS rocket, whatever you may have to say about it, it works, and it worked brilliantly in its first flight, is having such trouble building a space capsule that, you know, in general terms, and this is a very broad statement, isn't that different than what we were doing in the Gemini years. Yes, it's supposed to be reusable. Gemini probably could have been had it been handled differently. And yes, it holds more people and it's got more capability, but it's really designed to be an orbital taxi. It's not a deep space capsule. And it's just a real head scratcher to me how this can be so difficult. Comments?
Agreed. And since New Horizons doesn't have any parachute lines, I think they should just take $9 million and and send it over there. But you know, you said exactly what I was thinking, Rod. The great aviation history of this company, the extraordinary aircraft they've built. I don't get it.
I do wonder. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wonder how serious Boeing is taking Starliner.
One does, yes.
I think they're trying to do it in a new model, right? They're trying to do it from this commercial model where they own it. And the question, I think, you know, if I was a Boeing exec on this thing, it's just like, well, where's the business? Who are the customers on this thing? How many of these things? You mean I own this thing?
Please no.
I could see that it's just like, wait a minute, you know, I have, you know, we build aircraft and yeah, I know where my customer base is. And I know if I build one, I know exactly what the economics of that's going to be. And, you know, they're looking and they're scratching their heads. It's like, well, where is the new space economy that's supposed to be putting, you know, giving us these flights, you know, five of these a month and so forth, right, whatever it is that they need to make this really successful. So I do wonder, it's like, you know, are they really taking it seriously because they're just not sure? It's just like, well, at the end of the day, what's this really going to get us as a company? But
yeah, I kind of feel like they got themselves painted into a corner with this. The, as you point out, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but the part of the new space business that would be using this seems to be slowing a bit, at least in terms of future planning. And yeah, one thinks that there's a reasonable chance they may fly out their contract and say, okay, we had enough. Thanks very much. We don't need more losses. We need to get back into what we do. But that's pure conjecture. So let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with Rick Janae. This episode of This Week in Space is brought to you by ACI Learning. Our listeners know the name IT Pro is one of our trusted sponsors for the last decade. As a part of ACI Learning, IT Pro has elevated their highly entertaining, bingeable short format content with over 7,200 hours to choose from, with new episodes added daily. ACI Learning's world-class personal account managers will be with you every step of the way to make sure you're getting exactly what you need to be successful in your field. You can fortify your expertise with access to self-paced IT training videos, interactive practice labs, and certification practice tests. One user shares this: excellent resource, not just for theory, but labs incorporated within the subscription. It's fantastic. Highly recommend the resource and top-class instructors. Don't miss ACI Learning's practice labs, where you can test and experiment before deploying new apps or updates without compromising your live system. MSPs love it. Retake practice IT certification tests so you're confident when you sit for the actual exam. ACI Learning brings you IT practice exam questions from Microsoft, CompTIA, EC Council, PMI, and many more. You can also access every vendor and skill you need to advance your IT career in one place. ACI Learning is the only official video training for CompTIA. Or check out their Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security, cloud, and more. You can learn IT, pass your certs, and get your dream job. Or if you're ready to bring your group along, head over to our special link and fill out the form for your team. TWIT listeners receive at least 20% off on an IT Pro Enterprise solution and can reach up to 65% off for volume discounts depending on the number of seats you need. Learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/TWIT. For individuals, use code TWIT30 for 30% off a standard or premium individual IT Pro membership. That's go.acilearning.com/TWIT. So, Rick, I want to talk about you a bit because we don't do that enough around here. But first, can you tell us about Expanding Frontiers, what it is, what the mission is, and how you got started with it? It's a great story.
Well, certainly. Well, first off, I'd like to start with the why we do what we do. And the why is, put simply, we want to democratize space development. We want to make sure that space development and the advantages and opportunities that space has to offer, especially as humanity is pushing out now into the solar system and really seriously thinking about that, not just as government-led programs, but as private individuals and private companies and so forth, that that everyone has the opportunities that they has the opportunities, can develop the skills they need to, if they want to be, part of this this great endeavor, and especially in underserved and underrepresented areas. So Expanding Frontiers is located in Brownsville, Texas, happens to be one of the most underrepresented area with a population that is predominantly Hispanic, which are largely underrepresented in STEM, even still. And it's basically that, basically about giving these advantages. And what we do, we create companies. We create companies around space tech. We have a Space Act agreement with NASA, with the NASA Johnson facility located in right in Houston. And we work closely, with them, connecting entrepreneurs in the region to NASA technologies. We work with the entrepreneurs. In many cases, the entrepreneurs, you know, maybe they've heard the word. Maybe they know, hey, this could be interesting. I'd love to be involved in this, but they don't know how. They don't know how does one do this? So we basically help facilitate all that. Because what that does is it's going to create jobs. It's going to create more jobs. It's going to create investment in the region, which is then going to cycle back into being able to create more companies and so forth, and ultimately drive economic development in the region. And then, what exactly we do? We have programs designed for sort of many different levels of education and backgrounds. We have programs that work with high school students. Our Space Entrepreneur Summer Academy, which actually is just ending on Friday, and they're having their graduation, and which is basically they're going to be going up and giving a bunch of pitches on potential companies, space-related companies, new space companies. We also run something called the Space Settlement Design Tournament, another great experience for high school students to really get an understanding of what it is to work in the space industry. And then we have our entrepreneur development programs, one of them being our Entrepreneur in Residence Apprenticeship Program. I like to say no idea is necessary, the will to put in a lot of time and effort and work with really neat technologies and learn how to build a company around that. So also intern programs. We have an internship program which connects interns with other startup companies so they can get the experience of working with, in the startup environment. And something called Space Coders, where we work with the coding community in South Texas and connecting them with different interesting challenges associated with space and space development. So that I think covers the how, what, and why. In whichever order, for what we're doing down in South Texas with Expanding Frontiers.
Very well said, Rick. Can we hear more about you as a person, please? You have a PhD in astrophysics from Caltech. Did you pursue research before starting Expanding Frontiers? And what was your journey like as an astrophysicist?
Well, that's right. So, it started with another technical college on the East Coast, MIT, which that's where I had an opportunity to actually work on my first satellite program.
Excuse me, I have to break in for a second. I would love to see MIT's face when they hear you say, with another technical college on the East Coast. It's sort of the Caltech of the East, right? I'm sorry, go ahead. I hate to interrupt, but I just had to observe that. That was beautiful.
So, let's see, where were we? So, I had a great opportunity. Well, of course, undergraduate life at MIT is absolutely fantastic. And I did notice recently in the news that, MIT is an outlier in that actually everything is based on ability and, not necessarily on whether your parents went there or what your background genetically is or something like that, but is strongly biased towards capability. So, kudos to MIT for keeping that, keeping their integrity. But anyway, now I'm digressing.
You mean there's an actual meritocracy in operation?
I know. It seems like it, right? it's rare in these times, we know, right? So, sure. But anyway, got to work on my first space mission there, the X-ray Timing Explorer. which was a success. It lasted for over 10 years, outlasted its life and stuff. I built calibration chambers or something for that. It was a fantastic experience. And then basically got into Caltech in their PhD program, was there probably longer than I should have been, mainly because it was just, the environment there and the opportunities, just the people that you get to work with and be around, it was so fantastic. You know, you don't want to leave such a such a place. So, but eventually they gave me a degree and said, okay, time to leave. I went in the oil and gas industry for a while, Schlumberger, also a fantastic place, very forward-looking, very tech-oriented, as most oil and gas places, most oil and gas places are. It's where I really first saw the very deep connection between the space industry and the oil and gas industry, in the sense that it is, both of them are filled with people that love technology and love big challenges. And so there's a lot of cross-fertilization between the two. So after that, I went to NASA JPL. Basically, was there as a postdoc for several years. And then saw that there was this university down in this weird place in South Texas, in Brownsville, Texas, University of Texas, Brownsville, that they had a very strong physics department that was growing there, nationally, internationally recognized. There was some pretty big names for being where it was. And it piqued my curiosity. And recently they managed to recruit a rather famous astrophysicist, Richard Price, if you've ever heard of him. Fantastic guy, mentor, and a mentor of mine, and I think overall a great human being with a big heart. And so he himself saw an opportunity to really, to do what one loves to do and be in a region that they could really make an impact. And, he convinced me to come down. So getting a chance to, so I saw this opportunity to, to basically work in space exploration, and have this impact. So I thought it was a rare opportunity, something that, I'm very, very happy to see where things have gone. Things have grown tremendously since then. And I think I think it's just continuing to get better and move themselves forward with many different things that are happening down there. So,
excellent. Rick, you alluded to something that I've been dying to ask you about as well. You mentioned that your work with oil and gas, and I'm extremely interested in your rockets and rigs work. Would you tell us a little bit about that too, please?
Certainly. And this is actually, it's kind of foundational to what we're doing now in our Entrepreneur in Residence Apprenticeship Program. So Rockets and Rigs was an initiative, I guess it was first thought about in 2016. I think we were throwing the ideas around. What we wanted to do is we wanted to get the space industry and the oil and gas industry thinking and starting to think about overlapping challenges and develop ways to move or solve some of these challenges. I think the original ideas and plans, at least in my thinking, was that if we're really serious about asteroid mining, if we're really serious about resource extraction and working and developing resources in space, well, maybe the space industry should be talking with those that actually do this in a sense of, let's start thinking about it from the business of mining and material usage and extraction and so forth, getting that mindset there. So it was very neat to see that interaction. We had several workshops that culminated in I guess we call it a hackathon, where we basically we got NASA people, engineers, current and retired. We got oil and gas engineers as well, but not just the engineers, but also the business people on both sides and so forth, together with students and other you know, other people from the communities, and started looking at NASA technologies, just looking at these technologies to see where these could be used in other industries, especially in the oil and gas industry and so forth. So kind of going through and categorizing the technologies, and it ended in a series of pitches, which several of those have moved on now, you know, further in their development as companies. So that process of kind of analyzing technology in one area, bringing it to another, has kind of become the cornerstone of what we do at Expanding Frontiers now with our entrepreneur apprenticeship programs.
All right. Well, we are going to come back with my burning question about Bronzeville in just a second after this word from our sponsor. Stand by. This episode of This Week in Space is brought to you by Cisco Meraki, the experts in cloud-based networking for hybrid work. Whether your employees are working at home, at a cabin in the mountains, in a lounge chair at the beach, or from orbit, a cloud-based network provides the same exceptional work experience no matter where they are. You may as well roll out the welcome mat because hybrid work is here to stay. Hybrid work works best in the cloud and has its perks for both employees and leaders. Workers can move faster and deliver better results with a cloud-based managed network, while leaders can automate distributed operations, build more sustainable workspaces, and proactively protect the network. An IDG Market Pulse research report conducted from Meraki highlights top-tier opportunities in supporting hybrid work. Hybrid work is a priority for 78% of C-suite executives. Leaders want to drive collaboration forward while staying on top of or boosting productivity and security. Hybrid work also has its challenges, however. The IDG report raises the red flag about security, noting that 48% of leaders report cybersecurity threats as a primary obstacle to improving workforce experiences. Always-on security monitoring is part of what makes the cloud-managed network so awesome. IT can use apps from Meraki's vast ecosystem of partners, turnkey solutions built to work seamlessly with the Meraki cloud platform for asset tracking, location analytics, and more, to gather insights on how people use their workspaces. In a smart space, environmental sensors can track activity and occupancy levels to stay on top of cleanliness. To reserve workspaces based on vacancy and employee profiles, also called hot desking, which allows employees to quickly scout out a place to work. Locations and restricted environments can be booked in advance and include time-based door access. And mobile device management. Integrating devices and systems allow IT to manage, update, and troubleshoot company-owned devices, even when the device and employee are in a remote location. Turn any space into a place of productivity and empower your organization with the same exceptional experience no matter where they work with Meraki and the Cisco suite of technology. Learn how your organization can make hybrid work work. Visit meraki.cisco.com/twit. Don't you love how I use standby, that kind of space mission control talk there? So, Rick, to be honest with you, I hadn't heard of Brownsville, Texas before SpaceX started building Starbase down there. And I can only imagine that it was a very different community before SpaceX showed up in the region. Was that a big part of your decision-making about starting this organization there?
So I came to Brownsville in 2005. Long before SpaceX was considering it, long before various other industries and stuff were considering it. The idea was, at least the education piece of my work was, how do we get students involved in STEM fields? And what could be more exciting than space? So I wanted to connect the students with space exploration and development, but try to do it in a more concrete way. the thing I always saw, especially at the time, was, you know, people would hear about Nobel Prize winners in astrophysics or any Nobel Prize, physics Nobel Prize winner, right? And if a high school student asked, so what did they win the prize for? You know, usually you'd get a graph with some squiggly lines. There'd probably be three lines on it, which, you know, barely understood, and some numbers on the sides. And they'd say, hey, look, this is awesome. This is why they won the Nobel Prize. And, you know, they're kind of like, well, all right, that's great. So then the question was, how do you connect the expectations of somebody who hasn't gone through 30 or 40 years of studying the science, how do you connect the excitement, connect them with the excitement? And so that's what led to the Arecibo Remote Command Center, where we built what I like to say a fully operational command and control room on the campus of UT Brownsville, so that the students could come in. And now nowadays this is almost commonplace, right? But back then they were able to directly control the Arecibo Observatory remotely. You'd have all the control displays, you'd have all the cameras, all of this kind of stuff was there. And when they hit, when they instructed the telescope to, turn to point to a particular thing, it would do that. And, all the equipment of the observatory would start to move. And it was quite a thing back in the day when Arecibo was up and running to have this, to have this direct control. So much so that there was a lot of training behind it and stuff like that, because if they mistyped coordinates and stuff, it could actually damage the telescope. So they did have full control, which back in the day was very rare, and it was something that inspired a lot of students. Many students from that era have now gone on into PhDs themselves. Some of them are even professors now at various universities. So it was an exciting time, and it was exciting to have that impact. So basically everything we did was to sort of develop this pipeline, human resource pipeline of trained of people trained with the skills so that they could participate in space development. So that, and I can talk hours on this, but that led to various programs, including the Center for Advanced Radio Astronomy, which was the first center of excellence in the region. That its mission was basically to create this clear pipeline from the high schools all the way up into jobs, tech jobs, STEM jobs, and so forth. All focused around and using space as sort of the carrot and the catalyst to make this happen. This put us in a great position that when SpaceX was nosing around, that we could actually walk up and say, "Hey, I think we should collaborate." And that's what ultimately led to the Stargate program. And one of the first, and I think it's the only actual permanent structure that's at Starbase now, which is the Stargate facility, which is the University of Texas presence at that, at the launch facility. So in that journey, it became very clear. I think two things became very clear. One is, of course, everyone was really excited about what was happening. And the fact that this was happening in the backyard, this high tech things were happening, rockets were being launched or going to be launched, and so forth. It was pretty amazing. The second thing was there was this hunger to be involved, but there wasn't any clear routes. There wasn't any clear pathways to being involved. And specifically on tech entrepreneurship. Now, I've noticed that if you're sitting in New York, you're sitting in Boston, you're sitting in Los Angeles or San Francisco, and you want to learn about entrepreneurship, well, you go down to the local coffee shop, you get yourself your best brew, you sit down, and you listen to people. Yeah. And you probably have five conversations going on, each about different stages of their business. And their tech startup and all of this kind of stuff. And how do I approach this investor? And, what's my cap table? And how do I get this piece of technology to work? All of that that's going on. That culture wasn't quite there yet in South Texas. So that's where Expanding Frontiers came in, recognizing that there was this thirst for wanting to be an entrepreneur and wanting to, it's like, well, how do I get my space company? And now EXF is all about connecting that, giving these opportunities so that they can create jobs, they can create these new companies and they can create the jobs, and so that the talent can be retained down in South Texas. So those that got their degrees in physics and engineering can use that and stay within the region. So that's kind of you know, that's the brief history of Expanding Frontiers.
That leads so perfectly into my next question, Rick. So you've touched on this a little bit, but I want to hear some more. So your headquarters is in a city well under 200,000 population. So first of all, what does this Texas community think about you and your spaceflight colleagues setting up shop there? And secondly, have you seen the local community exploring, finding new opportunities for themselves in the new space economy that is growing in Brownsville?
Yeah. So, the interesting thing, kind of a precursor to that question, is we started in 2019. We started in the middle of 2019. And we all know what happened about 6 months later. So the entire world just shut down. So we did have to, a lot of our programs had to be revamped such that they could be done virtually. And we know we all had to deal with that. So now, I guess it's, you know, the last year we're slowly ramping up out of that. And I think now we're really getting into full swing on this. And so there are a lot of groups throughout the valley that are promoting and moving entrepreneurship, kind of taking taking our lead on this, seeing the importance of this. The community improvement organizations are gearing themselves such that they can support entrepreneurs. The Brownsville Community Improvement Organization, which is actually one of our great patrons, they created something called Startup Texas, so they could start to fund entrepreneurs. So we're definitely seeing the mindset change. You know, as with any changes in mindset, it takes a little time, so one has to have patience. You know, you see interesting things where people are struggling with the concept of a startup. It's just like, oh, great, you're going to start a company. Excellent. So tomorrow you're going to make money. It's like, It's like these are tech startups. There is a runway that is needed, right? But it's all of this, you know, it's these types of things. It's not like setting up a restaurant where, you know, I can make money tomorrow. So it's getting that understanding out there. And so we are, you know, Expanding Frontiers has, I guess, created now 7 companies that are all tech focused around NASA tech. They're all pre-seed. You know, they're moving through their stages and so forth. We have a great mentor team that we're importing from different regions, including including the Houston ecosystem and as well as the California and the Silicon Valley ecosystem, where we have these mentors come in and work closely with our entrepreneurs. So it's growing, and also we're here. You know, you can see the culture. So this idea of being a startup, this idea of thinking about scale, that's starting to now come over to other industries. So I think we just had our first brewery, not a tech company, but it's called Pluton Brewery. And it's Brownsville's first brewery. And they, you know, just hearing the way they talk about themselves in their journey, it is it's using the language and the frameworks of modern entrepreneurship, which is just fantastic. Fantastic to see the younger populations, you know, really seeing this and moving on, which, and it's, you know, that's one of the things we're really pushing, because you'll have great ideas. You'll have great, engineers that want to build. They can build anything, right? An engineer, they can put their minds together. They can build whatever it is. But the thing is, you got to have a reason for doing it. You have to have a customer. So it's that disciplined entrepreneurship that we're making sure is at the heart of what they're doing. So I think we're seeing the changes. We're seeing the changes in the discussions. We're seeing the changes in how the local community funding groups are gearing themselves up. And we're seeing these companies form. I think COVID, you know, did a number on really putting a damper on a lot of things. So, you know, we're a little, I'd say we're basically where we should have been 2 years ago on a lot of things just because of that. But you definitely see the trajectory in the right direction.
Well, and you certainly made remarkable progress in a relatively short period of time. When looking at your mission statement, I noticed you cover quite a swath of the population. You're helping students, veterans, women, aspiring entrepreneurs, and probably more. And I'm sure there's a lot of overlap there, but there's probably also a lot of very specific needs for any given group. How do you embrace all that in what I assume is a fairly small organization? Because that's, you know, I've seen big organizations, I've been involved with big organizations that were trying to just serve one or two parts of that kind of community and struggling. And here you are with a variety of programs covering a variety of needs. How did you work that out?
So, of course, there's always a innovation, tech development, of course, space development are kind of at the heart of all of these, you know, all of these ideas. The integration of all these different pieces, just the community happens to have underrepresented groups there, just in and of itself. The Hispanic community is 93%. So it just being there helps us with that group. And really, the way we help, you know, the way we make sure that at least we're moving in those right directions is the leadership. We have representation from these different groups in the leadership. Two of our directors, one director is a Hispanic woman who knows the region and has been involved in the politics and so forth in the border region for almost most of her career. Another one of our board members, an entrepreneur herself out of the Houston ecosystem, a huge amount of knowledge and just how you build companies and startups. And of course, having, a veterans involved in our programs and so forth. So, you know, having them represented at the leadership levels makes us, it makes us tune into what is required and developing programs such that we can address these. Do we have a lot to go? I'd say, of course we do. We always have a lot to build and move forward and make sure that we're appropriately addressing the different communities as we say we are. I think it's important that it's spoken, that it's dead in the mission statement, because if it's not visible, it just never gets, it doesn't even get any thought to it. And I think it's important to make sure that there's the diverse representation in the leadership. So I think that should have been my 30-second response. So.
Okay. Well, speaking of 30 seconds, we are going to be back with Jeffrey's next brilliant question right after this word from a sponsor. We'll be right back.
Save big money on plant protection supplies now at Menards. Defend your garden with Triazicide Insect Killer. Its fast-acting formula protects lawns, vegetables, and many other plants. It kills more than 260 insects by contact, above and below ground. Choose from ready-to-spray, concentrate, or granular. Save big money on Triazicide Insect Killer at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. You're on deck, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm going to quote something from your website, if I may. And it's about the Veterans Ascension Program. I thought this was so well written. To build a commercial space economy, nothing is more important than talent. One huge untapped resource is veterans of the U.S. military, especially highly skilled enlisted servicemen and women without college degrees. And then you go into talk about how this was founded by Sergeant Scott Castle. Could you tell us more about this, please? Sounds like a wonderful program. It's the type of thing that's much needed.
It definitely is. Basically the idea is encapsulated in what you said, which was there are people that are leaving service now. That have this enormous skill set. We did notice that there is an issue with, well, I don't know if it's an issue, but they don't get degrees for what they have. So, you know, they're trying to figure out how do they connect or, you know, write down what the skills they're capable of in a resume that they can be, you know, that they're able to sell themselves now that they, that's a terrible way of putting it, but basically they're able to get into industry or get into jobs when they leave the service. And so we wanted to sort of help that process and take advantage of the fact that the skill sets they have are very closely related to the skill sets you need for entrepreneurship, right? You need to have discipline and focus. You need to have the technical capability that background and understanding, and you just need to have that you know, do what you need to do attitude to move things forward. So we were very we were very blessed to have Sergeant Scott Castle for the time that we did. Unfortunately, he did succumb to PTSD within the time frame that we were working on these programs. So right now, Veterans Ascension, we're working with, I guess, his brother, which is an awesome guy, Aaron Castle, who's one of our entrepreneurs and so forth, to sort of help continue where Scott had left off on this. This is a program where I think it does have a lot of potential and that's there. And I think it's something that we need to, that we do need to move forward a little bit more than we have been. But there are definitely veterans that are involved in our programs working with us in different areas.
It sounds like a fantastic model. I'm very impressed by that. My late father, having been a veteran and many friends and colleagues. Would you encourage other companies to reach out to you? I mean, do you think you're a good model for this? Can other companies say, Rick, we want to work with veterans too. How do we get started? How do we, as you said, build a runway for this?
Yeah, no, I think that's almost a key thing so that we can, you know, the more interaction we have with external companies and so that we understand their needs and kind of make that transition easier. The better it is for us, the better it is for our veterans moving forward with that. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah, always encourage.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up for just a second on the veterans idea. I was at a conference a few years back, and it was during in the evening, actually, post-conference. We were sitting around out in the back 40, enjoying a couple of cigars and some bourbon, because I do that kind of thing.
Really? I've never seen
you. I know. and there was in the same hotel, there was this large group of, I think it was Army. This is in Arizona. We're going through training exercises, and a lot of them were within 6 months to a year of finishing up their hitch. And they overheard me talking to a few of the other folks about new space and what was going on with SpaceX and opportunities and so forth. And, you know, they had been kind of going through their usual kind of blustery talk. And then they got real quiet. And I looked over at them and I said, because it was two groups of us. I said, are you guys okay? And they said, yeah, this is just really interesting. So I refocused the conversation onto them. And it hadn't really occurred to me till then. I mean, I had hired veterans before in other parts of my career. And I knew how dedicated and disciplined and really just with it that they are. But it hadn't really occurred to me, you know, how good a fit many of them would be for these kinds of jobs that are coming along, not specifically as entrepreneurs necessarily, but just for some of the things that some of these new up and coming companies and certainly some of the legacy companies are looking for. And they were really hungry for the information. And I felt a little underprepared because this was just a casual conversation, but it was really thrilling to talk to these young people who had no expectation of doing much more than getting out and maybe getting a job in air conditioning or something. I said, well, you know, with that skill set, there are certainly other things you could do in this area. But I'm wondering if you have more comments about that, that's fine, or I'll move on to my next question.
No, the neat thing about South Texas with this idea is that I think a large number of our enlisted men and women are from that region. Especially in the Army. Right. And so, you know, we're very happy to be in that region so that we could, you know, grow and develop these programs, which is, as you pointed out, is a much needed thing. Even if at the very least, just coming in and having a conversation with them, you know, guiding them in the right direction. We definitely, because of Sergeant Castle and his dedication to this, where this is definitely something that is kind of near and dear to all of our hearts at Expanding Frontiers, and it's something that we want to grow our capabilities on.
So for somebody, and then I'm going to toss this back to Jeffrey, for somebody who's interested in working in new space or perhaps in the entrepreneur side of things, who isn't adjacent to you and isn't necessarily in an area that you would serve, do you have a broader recommendation for how to get engaged? Because I think for a lot of people that are skilled and fascinated, but not necessarily near an urban center where this kind of stuff is happening, there's very probably a lot of head scratching about, well, how do I get from here to there?
No, that's a great point. I mean, one is, I would say come to our website and get on our newsletter. That's the first piece. Also, there tends to be in many communities various entrepreneur centers and community improvement organizations. That would kind of be a first step, just to see, you know, what's there in your ecosystem. The small business administrations are great resources for these, just understanding, you know, what is in my ecosystem to do this. But then, you know, just looking at different resources online, you know, there are different programs and so forth, and just, you know, starting to understand what they're talking about, what are the different processes for doing this. But definitely I would say come to our website, have a read through there, get on our mailing list, and be happy to talk to anyone that wants to reach out and you know, learn more about what we do and entrepreneurship in space.
Rick, I don't know how you find time for everything, but I'm going to read another interesting tidbit about you, if I may. And it says here, the Center for Advanced Radio Astronomy, a center of excellence of the University of Texas, was created with the mission to create future leaders and was founded by none other than Dr. Frederick Genet, a leading advocate of astrophysics research. What do you think? How do you find time for all of this stuff?
Well, I don't think I paid whoever wrote that. But
that's even better. It's like Wikipedia, you know, it's done organically and then it's a genuine compliment.
Everyone's a narcissist in one form, right? And it just depends on where on the scale you are. And of course, being on the podcast and staring at my picture here throughout the whole thing, you know, it kind of amplifies narcissism. So I gotta rein it back a little bit here. And what I just want to say that, you know, no person is an island unto themselves. All of this it's a team effort with very dedicated people that I work with, people that, you know, share this vision that, you know, that we can basically make South Texas and Brownsville a leading area in space development, in innovation. And so, you know, it's not just, you know, I'd love to say, yeah, it's me, rah, rah. No, it's not. I have a fantastic team behind, everything that is done here. My co-founders, Alma Miller and Andy Miller of Expanding Frontiers, have been, forces of nature behind a lot of, what we're doing here. Jane Lee Hicks is also a board member of Expanding Frontiers. She's former director at the Houston Technology Center. And she has this passion for entrepreneurship that is just absolutely amazing. And she, you know, her goal is just to make the companies that are coming out of Expanding Frontiers successful. And she puts in, I don't know where she finds the time to put to do what she does. together with all our interns and our staff at Expanding Frontiers, many of whom were at the university with me and have come over from that. They're just an amazing, dedicated team to what we're doing and the mission. I think that's the real reason behind all the changes and stuff that are happening is just this really fantastic team that we work very well together. And I'm sure I'm going to hear a lot of feedback from this podcast on them, for both good and bad and so forth from them, which is one of the important, it's what makes this work, is that we're very comfortable and around each other and telling us, okay, this is going to work, this is not going to work, and so forth. And when push comes to shove, we band together and we overcome what's needed to happen. So.
Well, that's good. I think you've sufficiently deflected our adoration for one afternoon. Before I let you go, though, I did want to mention you have a fundraiser going on, which is always an important thing for nonprofits. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, what it's for, what it means, and where you hope it goes.
Yes. So the fundraiser is basically to help us support the students and the entrepreneurs that are working in our programs. So as I mentioned, the Space Entrepreneur Summer Academy, the Space Settlement Design Tournaments, there is a lot of behind the scenes operations that happen to bring those opportunities to the students. And so the funding basically helps us do that. It helps us with the support and the staff that's necessary to bring those programs. Also helps with the support of our entrepreneurs. Some of the funding goes to mentoring our entrepreneurs, as well as going to pre-seed funding so that they can basically help build some of their ideas out and reach their dreams. So our goal is $50,000 by the end of the summer, and we hope that people, any amount helps. So please find it in your heart to help us out.
Oh, you kind of get me right there. Thanks for joining us today, Rick. I really appreciate it. And it's a fascinating look at some of what's happening in the new space area, because while we talk about that a lot here, it's something that I think isn't necessarily, there's a lot of conversation around new space, but there's not always a lot of conversation about how to get from A to D, which is a gap that you're closing with a lot of skill. Besides the expandingfrontiers.org or exf.org website, I'm sorry, it's expandingfrontiers.org, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there another good place to keep up with what you're up to?
Another good place. That's the main thing. But also I would put a plug for the National Space Society. Being a board member, and I think all of us are on the call here, are involved in NSS. Indeed. One way or another.
Yep.
It's a fantastic organization that has deep roots in the space industry, and I think has great visions for space settlement and space development. And I think something that I see as a potential for NSS is to get more involved in entrepreneurship. And perhaps NSS being a major player in that connector for entrepreneurs. So we'll see how all of that goes. NSS and EXF do have a MOU together. We're working together on entrepreneurship. So NSS is another great organization to stay on top of what's happening in space. So.
And although Jeff is going to cringe when I say this, our website is still space.nss.org. But NSS.org will be redirected to that. So we are making progress. Jeffrey, where can we find you thinking up your next dazzling space joke?
Oh, well, thank you, Rod. First of all, I really want to thank Rick for being such an articulate and inspiring speaker, and mm-hmm. for your work with veterans and everything else. It's really been an uplifting and enlightening show. Thank you also for the plug for National Space Society. Rod is, of course, the editor-in-chief of our glorious magazine, Ad Astra. I am a member of the Board of Governors and a past president of the mighty NSS. And if you would like to watch me stagger around the world with a crazy co-host pickaxe in hand looking for meteorites and other junk that fallen out of space. My old TV show, Meteorite Men, is enjoying a bit of a resurgence and is streaming in glorious high definition all over the world. And I am social media friendly. I am GEOFFNOTKIN, Jeff Notkin, on just about everything. Send me a hello. And I will not throw a space rock back at you, promise.
Because they just fall out of the sky anyway. And with better odds than the lottery, as we noted a couple of weeks
indeed.
Ago. And of course, you can always find me at pilebooks.com or at astromagazine.com. And I too am on Facebook, Twitter, and occasionally Instagram. But good luck finding me there because I don't post enough. Don't forget to drop us a line at twit.tv. Let's try that again. That's twis@twit.tv, T-W-I-S at twit.tv. We always welcome your comments, suggestions, ideas, hurled meteorites, whatever you got. And we do answer each and every email. Also, don't forget to check out space.com, our partner in this podcast, whose website is in their name, and the National Space Society at NSS.org. Both are good places to satisfy your spaceflight cravings. New episodes of this podcast publish every Friday on your favorite podcatchers, so be sure to subscribe and tell your friends. And please give us reviews. Nice ones are appreciated, but you can say whatever you like. We'll take whatever you got. And don't forget, you can get all the great programming on the Twit Network ad-free at Club Twit, which is where this very show was birthed and where you will find some other shows and extras that are only available there for just $7 a month. And that's less than 1 gallon of fuel for my boat. So that's quite a deal. Finally, you can follow the Twit Tech Podcast Network at Twit on Twitter and on Facebook and twit.tv on Instagram. Thanks very much, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Oh, hey, that's a really nice iPhone you have there. You totally picked the right color. Hey, since you do use an iPhone and maybe use an iPad or an Apple Watch or an Apple TV, well, you should check out iOS Today. It's a show that I, Micah Sargent, and my co-host Rosemary Orchard host every Tuesday right here on the Twit Network. It covers all things iOS, tvOS, HomePodOS, WatchOS, iPadOS. It's all the OSs that Apple has on offer. And we love to give you tips and tricks about making the most of those devices, checking out great apps and services, and answering your tech questions. I hope you check it out.
Save big money on plant protection supplies now at Menards. Defend your garden with triazicide insect killer. Its fast-acting formula protects lawns, vegetables, and many other plants. It kills more than 260 insects by contact, above and below ground. Choose from ready to spray, concentrate, or granular. Save big money on triazicide insect killer at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.